y'all could respond.
What I would request, and the issue that you all have raised are very appropriate, very timely. What I would just request is that you frame it as a question with as much degree of specificity, so I don't get into my generalities. If it's something relative to what I think, what is my position, I'd be more than willing to answer that. If it's relative to what I will actually do, I'll respond in kind. So if you can kind of ask a question with as much specificity as you can, I would be appreciative. I know there were some questions.
I interrupted you before.
Oh, that's all right.
You have the opportunity to ask.
I think I probably have.
Okay, Jerry, you want to go back then?
Sure. Question is on advocacy. We often have a little bit of hesitancy with advocacy in the public sphere because of the spending implications with the school district. Like, fire department wants a new fire engine, they ask for it unabashedly. School wants to build a new school. It's a little bit held back, you know, that there has to be a lot of planning and everything else. I'm just wondering how you feel about pushing a little bit more on the envelope towards advocating for education in the community.
Well, I think the best form of advocacy that one can do relative to education is to advocate through actions as a district. Where districts capacity to yield some positive results, subsequently market those results, and subsequently market the vision that the district has under the direction of the board that will, you know, obviously involve an inclusive process to be the first phases of that. I think once you have developed the confidence in the public and you start to speak about ways that education can be enhanced, that the system can be improved, and you provide as much specificity as you can relative to what you plan to do, I think those would be the initial phases of advocacy. So if you're talking, for example, in our district, we have gone through a number of cases where we sought a bond referendum. There are times in the cabinet meetings that we may have explored the whole notion of a bond referendum. But we had to gauge whether or not the public's confidence in the district was where it should be for them to really commit their resources and make the sacrifices necessary for our children. So the public is quite entitled to be able to expect a return on their investment, but they have to see some evidence of a clear direction, a clear plan of action, and some results today.
Doesn't matter. I'm just wondering what your philosophy is in terms of central curriculum development versus, let's say, hiring the best teachers and letting them roll.
My philosophy.
You know, Moses and the tablets versus, Moses coming down with the tablets and saying, here it is, versus, you know, we've got good teachers, let them do their thing.
I think, my position is very, very clear, and I, you know, one thing I am, one who does stand by my convictions. I'm not going to posture relative to, you know, things that I don't truly believe in. I'm very, very clear on the what. The what has to be very, very clear. Now, where we start to give deference to for educators who have the skill and the will to deliver educational services to students is on the how. So the what has to be very clear. What is it that we want our students to know? What is it that we want them to be able to do? And at the end of the day, when I defer to you on the how ultimately are we going to measure impact and outcome? So those three things have to be clear. And those three things have to reflect the board's position on educational outcomes for all of the children in the district. The nuances and the rub is in the how. And I think when Moses does come down and say, thou shalt teach this particular standard, and thou shalt teach it this way, I think that is when you do impose upon some innovation, you impose upon some degree of creativity, and you may impose upon some degree of impact. But where you do have some best models, where you do have some best practices, you build upon those. But there are times in which the educational leader has to make some determinations relative to guidance and direction. And I think that is, again, based on the impact that the school, under their particular approach to the how, has yielded the results that we have defined clearly as the what.
Thinking about the university, and you may have noticed there's a rather large university part of this community. And some universities and their school districts tend to ignore each other. We don't do that. I don't think we do that in this district and this university. There's strong collaboration from both of those partners. I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on collaboration and thoughts on P16 kind of continuum.
This, from my initial observation, does represent the epitome of what I would view as a district-university collaboration. My thoughts are that it's critical, it's essential, that it's important, and that it should be expanded and built upon. What I would be interested in knowing is to what extent have we peeled back as many layers of the onion as we possibly can and really have gone deeper into that particular relationship and expand upon those things that are successful and explore those things that, according to the research coming out of the university, that we may view as a best practices model, or some of the practices that we view on the school site that need to be captured and explored and potentially shared nationally. One of the things that I did talk about and I'm a strong proponent of is the whole notion of knowledge management. Too often as an organization that's successful, you continue to go year in and year out being successful. So 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you're very successful. But as some things within the organization, some things that are external to the organization, i.e. demographics, i.e. fiscal resources, i.e. board changes, whatever the case may be, now the changes are going to impede your ability to sustain the successes that you have. At that particular point, the whole notion of expert thinking is when you can draw back upon those experiences that you found to be successful. And I think the university school district's relationship and this whole paradigm of knowledge management, have we captured the knowledge of what has been successful in schools, working with children, building the capacity of teachers and leaders, and can we replicate and can we at some particular point take it to scale? So those are my thoughts on that. I think we may have pockets of excellence, but if you get down into the specificity as it relates to, this school has been successful for 5 years. What did you do? Well, we had great parental involvement. Well, we had a strong leader. Those things obviously are qualitative, but specifically, a district on the other side of Wisconsin wants to say to you, can you give me some specific strategies that I can use, that I can replicate? Or you can explore within the district taking some of those best practices that I saw in one particular school today and potentially take that to scale with a school that may not be realizing the successful achievement that we want for our children. And I think the university's role and their resources can really help to build upon that particular knowledge base and knowledge management.
Thank you.
I want to make this question was asked, I apologize. I'm curious what your view is about educating children with significant disabilities, whether that be within an inclusionary model or separately.
Obviously, I would refer to what's reflected in the child IEP, but I think I would support the whole notion. My position is clearly on providing the student with the least restrictive education environment as possible. So whereas the restrictions are affected in IEP, then we have to refer to that. But I think the whole notion of trying to develop not only academic skills for students who are having some academic deficiencies, but the social skills as well through an inclusive model would be one of the best approaches that would be in the interest of the child. But again, as you know, any student that is under an IEP is under IEP because there are some individualized educational requirements that we have to satisfy. And I think we would have to refer to that. But I think my position is that we try to provide the best education opportunity and experience for the student. And I think the least restrictive environment will provide the best opportunity for that child to not only develop academically, but also to develop the social and soft skills that we want our students to develop and maintain and what the workplace will demand. So it's not simply being able to have the capacity to develop, organize, structure, put together a wish. The new workplace will now demand, can you work with others? Can you work with teams? Can you work collectively to solve complex problems? And if we provide students with an environment that's very restrictive, Although we may sharpen up or shore up their academic skills, we're now placing those students in a restricted environment where they're not developing the capacity to work with others. And we can't mention the peripheral effects of stigmatizing any child, as which our young officer described to.
I have kind of two questions. What is your philosophy both with after-school programming and working with the agencies outside of the community, within the community and the district?
My philosophy and my position on after-school programs focus on quality. I think we utilize the whole notion of after-school programs as something that's out there, but after-school programs that are intended to do what for whom and how. And how do we measure the impact of the after-school programs? I think it's very important that youngsters are involved in meaningful activities in their lives, both in school and out of school. But as we look at after-school programs, we want to make sure that they are high quality, that they in some shape, form, or fashion reinforce learning, and learning is not always an academic endeavor. Learning can be, again, those social skills that I talked about, team building, cooperative learning, community involvement, service learning. So after-school activities are very, very critical and very, very important. Community-based organizations do play a vital role in that, and I think the school system cannot do the particular body of work that is needed, not only in Madison, but throughout districts in this nation. For education to successfully take place, it's going to have to require three shoulders to be placed upon the wheel. The shoulder of the student, the shoulder of the student, the shoulder of the district, and the shoulder of the home slash community, i.e. university. So where there's a gap in us and our ability to provide the best educational opportunity for the child. So if you were trying to construct that particular theory of action in your mind, you would put a triangle with an E in the middle that represents education. The student is always at the top, so that student has a responsibility in his or her education. Okay, the district has a responsibility in terms of providing the resources, both material and human, and organizational resources to make sure that students are successful. And the community and the home and other external organizations and stakeholders have a major role in that. Where there is only the student and the district, the child's opportunity for success is not maximized. Where there is only the district and the home and the family, the mother wants it for the child, the father wants it for the child doesn't want it for him or herself, that child's opportunities for success are going to be somewhat mitigated. So community organizations play a major role. You just have to be very clear on what that role is, what it looks like, and at the end of the day, what are the desired outcomes that we want for our children.
Let's say that once you're in the position and everything, how will you hold the administrative staff and the district accountable for making sure that certain levels of performance expectations are indeed achieved and stuff? How will you do that? I mean, we've heard an awful lot of the administrators come in and say, we must do this, we must provide, we must be, you know, in contact. But there has to be a bottom line where the rubber meets the road, and it's going to say you did it or you didn't do it, and what is the consequence?
The short answer to that question relative to how I would hold administrators accountable for specific outcomes is the same way that I hold myself accountable for the outcomes that we desire. Outcomes that are clearly defined, outcomes that are measurable, and outcomes that ultimately have an impact on the learning and lives of children. So we had a brief conversation outside relative to the qualitative evaluations that typically have been pervasive in public education. He's a nice guy. She's so pleasant. She has an open door policy. Her school is nice and clean. The children are so well-mannered. Okay, those are very important. But those are some qualitative measures that, although critical, at the end of the day, does it make a determination whether or not a child, over the course of 180 days, moved from this point in learning to that point in learning? Have we made an impact? Have we made an impact in attendance? Have we made an impact in reducing suspension? Have we made an impact in growing involvement? And obviously, have we made an impact in academic support? Have we made an impact in extending learning opportunities? Because there's more than one way to skin a cat. Okay, you can't really measure exclusively the impact of a school simply on one accountability system.
So you have to have multiple means to assess the impact of a school as led by a principal, as supported by district staff, but they have to be very clear, they have to be very specific, and they have to be measurable. And you do that in a very transparent way, and ultimately they have to be aligned to the vision and the direction that this board has as reflected in the strategic plan, which is something that obviously involves an inclusive process with the community.
Where does your philosophy fall on gifted skill grouping, both at the elementary level, middle, and where do you fall in terms of gifted skill grouping and the opportunity for that for those who want to choose that as opposed to a heterogeneous and a homogeneous curriculum? And I'm talking about in the elementary level maybe gifted ability or gifted skill classes or pullouts. Gifted skill charter school in middle school that there might be a level for advanced learning and in high school advanced placement and honor class levels.
My position on the gifted and my response clearly is not elusive. That's not my style. My position on the gifted delivery system is consistent with my position on educating all children. I think we need to have a system by which we provide the opportunity for every child to meet his or her full potential. And we do that through the delivery of an instructional program that is tailored to meet the individual needs of children. Relative to providing for a segregated environment, per se, if you will, and I don't know if that's the line of questioning, but a situation where you may have a classroom of 24 students, and out of the 24 students, you have two gifted students, and that teacher, a teacher will be assigned just to those two students. I think we would have to definitely examine the efficient delivery of that particular model. But the other portion of that is one in which we make some determinations relative to quality and expansion. And what I mean by that is we want to make sure, number one, that the gifted programs that we have in place, okay, whether they're heterogeneous, homogeneous, whatever the case may be, that they are of quality. And quality has to be measured. It has to be something different. It can't be a situation where a child has been identified as gifted, he's gone through, staff is gifted, and now he or she is in a gifted classroom with all children that say, I am gifted. And they're sitting next door to a classroom of students that are not gifted. But the educational experience is the same. Okay, so relative to the rigor, relative to the relevance, and relative to the relationships. Rigor, primarily, when you're talking about gifted students, is it more rigorous based on what this child's particular attitude is, or is it an environment in which children have basically been placed on an organizational track, have been identified, and they don't have a unique instructional experience that is in alignment with what the gifted program's focus should be? So that would speak to the quality. That's number one. The expansion of it is to expand more opportunities for students to have a rigorous, robust educational experience in our schools. And I think that would require us to expand and explore opportunities by how we go about identifying students who have potential. We have all read some of the literature on the self-fulfilling prophecy and the Pygmalion effect of what students believe they are, they become. So we do have students who have enormous potential, but are we starting a process to identify early on opportunities for students who have that potential and tap into that potential through experiences that are going to shore up their skills, but also shore up their confidence? So quality would be my focus. A measure of efficiency would definitely be a consideration, okay? But also an opportunity to expand learning opportunities to as many students through gifted, through advanced placement, through honors as feasible. Okay, so the whole notion of gifted or high performing versus non-gifted and low performing students, it can't be an either or, it's a both and. So we don't do one at the expense of the other. Our obligation is to provide learning opportunities for all students and leverage whatever resources we have in this district to make sure that those needs are met to the best extent possible, with an emphasis on equity, efficiency, and effectiveness. And when I speak to effectiveness, I'm talking about quality. Not to say we have a gifted program, because we have it. Not to say we've been added additional honors classes. These kids are honors students, but they don't have a rigorous curriculum reflecting anything different from the other children. Mm-hmm. So we have to have that distinction, and we have to make sure that's very clear. And I would have to do a degree of due diligence before I can render any position on what Madison has done to talk about what can be done.
I have another one. In your preparation for this position, can you share with us what you think might be the top three challenges that you see coming into the superintendent's position?
I can give you, just not give you three. I can give you two come to mind very, very quickly. The shifting demographics of this community, okay, and the educational systems, legal, professional, political, and I would suffice to say, moral obligation to respond to the needs of that shifting demographic. Which again is not a demographic speaking exclusively to race and ethnicity. It's a demographic that crosses economics. Okay, that's one challenge. In response to that challenge, making sure that in years to come we maintain quality, okay, in the district for all students, and that we don't maintain the quality for all students in the district in a way that creates a tale of two cities. So when we have the verbal conundrum or the intellectual conundrum of this group of students versus that group of students, we're in a position to serve all students. So we're going to have to be very nimble, very innovative, very focused about how we do that. And that's not easy. I may articulate it in a very simplistic way, but it is not easy. It's not easy in a district that may have some fiscal challenges. It's not easy in a district that may continue to have some other gaps relative to other resources that may need to be in there. It may not be easy in a district that may go through a transitional period. It may not be easy in a district that has a community that is either unwilling or unable to come together for all children and not say those children, these children, but all of our children. Mm-hmm. It may not be easy. It may not be easy. But we have a choice in that particular regard. We either do something or we do nothing. And doing nothing for me has never been an option. And I'm sure for this community it won't be. So what we do, how we do it, that's something that's going to be a collective effort on the part of the community, with the leadership of the board, at the direction of the board, to the superintendent, to the schools. But again, those three particular constructs that I mentioned, the student, the school, the home, the district, the university, the community, everybody's going to have to come together to meet those particular challenges which are amongst this community right now. And failure not to respond to that will not have implications for some people in Madison. Failure to respond to that will have implications for all of us. Will have implications for all of us. In some shape, form, or fashion, maybe not in our public schools, but it will have implications in the area that will hurt us the most. And that is in our quality of life. And until we understand that the quality of our public school systems, the quality of our children, how we best prepare them to transition to the next iteration of their lives beyond high school, will have an impact on the quality of our lives and our ability to sustain ourselves in retirement, after work, we have to understand that. So eventually, we all are going to be held accountable. So you don't have children in school anymore. My children have graduated. If you're a member of this community, it is everybody's responsibility, because everybody at some point is going to be held accountable.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt here. We've kind of been feeling our way here this afternoon, and we've taken questions, which we thought we were only going to do that for a few minutes. We want to have everybody who's come in the last half hour who haven't had the chance to meet Dr. Gallen to have that opportunity. But one of the things, Steve, if you so wish, because you've been so kind of answering questions, we thought it was going to be more informal here. If you wish to say anything for maybe 5 minutes, and then we'd like to invite those who were not here when we went around the room, come up and introduce yourself, because we have to be done at 5:15. So I'm going to put an end to just our questions, ask Dr. Galen if he wishes to talk about what he wants to talk about for a few minutes. And then we're going to have those who have not met him yet have the opportunity to come up.
Thank you, Ken.
Did you say this will be another period of questions?
No, there's not. We had only planned to have we had only planned to have a few minutes of questions anyway, and
this is Madison.
Kind of made it more formal. So I'm sorry.
But I hope that my response to your question did provide you with some degree of insight into not only my head but my heart relative to education and what's going to be required of the superintendent of this school, whether it's me or anybody else. What's required of all educators. You have to have a head for this work, but you also have to have a heart for this work. And that applies to a teacher, that applies to a cafeteria worker who serves our children, that applies to a custodial member who cleans our schools. It's not only what you know, but it's what you fundamentally believe relative to the capability of children. So I hope you had an opportunity to do that. The next thing that I will say to each and every one of you is thank you. I want to thank you for providing me with this opportunity for, number one, coming out and showing up. The laborers are, the harvest is plenty, but the laborers are few. It's very refreshing as they have gone into this new endeavor to see people show up. And that's consistently what we're going to have to do if we're going to work to elevate the learning and the lives of all of our children. It's show up. If you're a community person, show up. If you're at the university level, thanks for showing up. If you're a parent, show up. If you're a member of the clergy, show up. If you're a teacher, come to work. Show up. I know it's snowing, but the children are looking for you to show up. So I want to just thank you as a community today for showing up and showing an interest in who assumes the helm of the superintendency here in Madison, County Schools. So I want to just thank you for that, your presence, thank you for your questioning, thank you for your concern. And again, I view the superintendency as a position of leadership, but it is a position of leadership that is grounded in a position of service. So I look forward to having the opportunity potentially to serve you, but I do thank you for your time, I thank you for your interest, and I commend you for the work that you have done thus far. Lastly, as I close, although Madison is an outstanding district, and that outstanding accomplishments, educational excellence, the success of our children is not a destination to which we arrive, but it's a journey upon which we embark. And this journey never ends. This journey never ends. Year in and year out, the journey continues. The journey continues. And the road ahead is going to be a very challenging journey, but if you collectively work together, see what's in the interest of all children. As I share with the staff members, how do I make a decision relative to education? Starting with, how does it benefit a child? Is it educationally proven? And is it fair and equitable? If you keep those three things in mind, I'm sure that Madison will continue to not only be a good district, but become a great district as you move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'd ask those who have not met Dr. Galen to please come forward. We'll have like a receiving line here if you already have introduced yourself.